Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. This episode, we talk about our new overclocking adventures using SLI, RGB effects with Silverstone, and Pascal gets ray tracing. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia. With me today, I have Darren McKay.
Dennis, I know we just got back from our last round of overclocking adventures, which we talked about in our last podcast, Extra.
Extra, check them out.
That's right. Now, that was our Boise LAN experience and also our time at Hackfort. But I know that despite the success that we had at Hackfort, which you can go back to our previous podcast and listen to, that we didn't stop there with our overclocking adventures.
No, we did not. We had a bit of liquid nitrogen left over. I mean, we only used maybe 8 or 10 liters on the show floor. I didn't know that it wouldn't take that much.
Well, it's very unpredictable. You never know how much you're going to go through when you're overclocking. And we did get a World Cup, which was exciting.
Yeah.
So we accomplished our goals.
We did.
And we packed up and went home.
Well, yeah, we had a beverage and then went home.
But the question remained, right?
Yeah.
If we could get one World Cup, maybe we could get some more. And we did have some liquid nitrogen.
And I went home and actually started running some other hardware. So I had my 1050 Ti OC that I was running at Hackfort. Later that evening, I wanted to see how cold it would get and still run. And it got down to like a negative 140 until the system crashed. And then I looked over at the board and it was completely covered in frost.
Oh no. Oh no. Now, before we go too far,
We
should refresh folks' memory. What was the system that we were working with? Where do we start?
Okay. So we had motherboard, the MSI Z390 Ace. It's a Mega Edition, and I was using a 9900K Intel Core i9. I was using a Crucial P1 NVMe drive, so I didn't have to have an external SSD while I'm running. And I was also running Ballistics Elite memory, which was 2666.
Well, that doesn't sound like that's very fast.
No, it's not, but I overclocked it.
So it sounds like a pretty solid machine to start with. Mm-hmm. And we got a beautiful World Cup for our video card.
Yeah, well, we can't really call them a World Cup, but it's a Gold Cup in that particular benchmark in that particular hardware category.
I'll take it. It's a world record.
Yeah, and that was in 3D Mark 06, and that was on show floor at Hackfort. I was really proud to get that. It was actually a bit of a surprise, too. I'm like sitting there pouring as the benchmark's running, talking to some people. And then I look down at one of the keyframes and it's like, whoa, this is faster. So then I started paying attention. And then, of course, when the score came up, I was like, yeah, it's awesome. And I held up my little Stanley thermos and almost spilled liquid nitrogen on myself.
A little liquid nitrogen bath, like a champagne bath the racers take, right? Only way more dangerous.
Yeah. But when I got home, I was playing around with the 1050 Ti and I got it frozen and it stopped working for a moment. So I'm like, all right.
Now, we always talk about the risks of overclocking, and this one is one of them. Although, to be fair, we did probably get a little bit too crazy with that card.
Yeah, but it still works. It just stopped working that night, which is kind of weird. I went in and, I got some hardware.
Yeah.
So I pulled out two GeForce GTX 780 Ti's, and these are both EVGA classifieds. One of them is a Kingpin edition. The other one is just a regular classified.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, these are some of your go-to cards. You do a lot of overclocking with these cards. So predictable, safe?
Predictable and safe. I know what they can do. The Kingpin card obviously runs faster out of the box than the plain classified, but the classified edition will match the Kingpin in terms of clock speed, both in memory and the core. So they're easily matched.
Okay, why is that important?
That is important because when you run them in SLI, you want to make sure that when it's splitting the frames across the cards, that they are returning the frames as fast as possible. And if one of them is returning a frame faster than the other, it will actually slow down the benchmark.
Okay. So we put the two 780 Ti's?
780 Ti classifieds.
Now you put these into overclock, but did we put liquid nitrogen pots on them? Or?
No. I was just running them at air.
Okay.
I had some liquid nitrogen, but not a lot. And it takes a long time to put an evaporator on a video card so that you can actually run it with LN2. And then at that point, there's a whole mess of testing that you have to do. Generally speaking, when you cool a video card with liquid nitrogen, it goes through it really, 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 really fast. meaning it takes a lot more liquid nitrogen to make them cool.
Oh, yeah. So we didn't want to use it all up in one go.
No. So I was just running them on air, and it turns out I did not need to overclock them very much to get some records, partially because I had tuned the 9900K really well to get my 3D Mark 06 record with the 1050. So that translated well to a gold cup in the SLI category for 3D Mark 03.
Nice.
So that was, what was it, 242,600 and some change.
It's very impressive. Now, that is a video-based overclock?
Yeah, it's a 3D, it's 3D Mark benchmark, or a 3D benchmark, sorry. 3D Mark 03 was released back in the AGP days. If they wanted that benchmark to go fast, you needed a little bit of video card overclocking and a whole lot of CPU speed. You get it, the data to the video card as fast as possible. Since I had the system tuned, you know, my 2666 memory was all the way up at 3200. I tightened the timings a bit.
Now hold on, now that's impressive. And that's the Ballistics Elite memory, right?
Right. And then I had also increased the Northbridge frequency, or the memory clock frequency, and the CPU. So that was running really fast. And a little tweak that you can do is you can add 1 megahertz to the base clock.
How does that help? Just one?
Just one. It actually changes one of the clock frequencies so that data will get from the CPU to the video card much faster.
That's a clever trick.
Yeah, if you go 2, it actually slows down.
Weird. That's very weird. Diminishing returns again. Yeah. I'm always amazed at how that rears its ugly head.
Yeah, it's just pretty crazy how that works. But that's one of the tuning tweaks, and a lot of overclockers do this.
Nice.
So I was able to get a gold cup in 3D Mark 03 with these two 780 Ti's. Turned around and ran 06, and lo and behold, I got a gold cup in the SLI category.
And 06 is, again, the newer version of the video card benchmarking system, or yeah, video card, I guess, based.
Yeah, it's, well, it's 06, so it's the one that we're running at Hackfort with the dragon that comes out of the water and jumps over the balloon.
It's always fun to watch. Now, how come there isn't a 3D Mark 2019 out there?
Oh, they rebranded to just call 3D Mark. So they have the 3D Mark suite, and then they keep adding benchmarks to it. So it's 3D Mark Firestrike, because Firestrike's in there. And then you got Skydiver and Time Spy, and I forget the one that does ray tracing now. But instead of doing individual benchmarks per year, like what they did with 3D Mark 03 and 6 and 5 and 11, they're just keeping it with the name of the benchmark instead.
No, that makes sense. Okay.
It's pretty cool, actually. Let's see. Oh, the next one. I got second place.
Well, still, that's pretty good. This is the Skydiver that you were just talking about.
Yeah, this is Skydiver. This is not an extreme benchmark. It's actually for mid-range hardware, laptops and stuff like that. But it turns out that HardwareBot gives you points for it. So I ran
it. Might as well run it. And a second place on there. Any chance of coming back and trying to go for the top spot?
Yes. Well, of course, you know, anytime that you get a bronze or a silver, there's always the chance that you could probably go for the gold if you just tweaked a little bit more.
And had a little bit of liquid nitrogen still.
Exactly. And with this particular, the way that this benchmark is set up, I think that my subsystem was not optimized for the way that that benchmark runs. And this one leverages a lot more on the video card versus the CPU. So there's a lot to contend with there as well. And I just wanted to get through them as quick as possible. So I had the base system set up, and I just installed a whole bunch of benchmarks and just figured I'm going to run a sweep, and I'll go this benchmark, save the score. This benchmark, save the score. I didn't even know that I got a silver cup in this benchmark until I submitted it.
Just happened to be the next one on the list. I get it.
And then the last one, which I know that I can improve if I tweaked with it a little bit more, is 3D Mark Vantage. And this one, I got fifth place.
Fifth place. Well, still, that's pretty good. I know this is a really popular benchmark.
Yeah, it's very popular, and it's easy to run. That's the thing. But it turns out that the people that got fourth, third, second, and first are all running liquid nitrogen on their 780 Ti's.
Oh, okay.
So there's a chance that if I want to take that record, I'm going to have to freeze these cards to go forward.
Very doable.
And on top of that, I submitted another 5 benchmarks, but I placed like in the top 30 in all of those, which is a testament to the way that the system was tuned, but then also the fact that I was just, some of them were very competitive, like Firestrike. There's a lot of people that are trying to get scores there. Other ones, I didn't tune it. when I was running my video card clocks for that particular benchmark, I didn't tweak them. I just ran them all the way through.
Now, when we were doing the presentations and the on-the-floor overclocking at Hackfort, I know that we frequently talked about the performance issues of PCs and that your system is only as fast as its weakest link. Mm-hmm. So on this particular run with these machines, what would you say was the slowdown, the weakest link here?
Well, once I got past 3DMark 06, the benchmarks weighed heavier on video card performance. So a lot of the people that were scoring higher than me were on water, or they were on liquid nitrogen. And at that point, you can run the GPU a lot faster. Since I wanted to keep with the air cooling, I was limited by the temperature threshold to get the clocks up. Obviously, the Kingpin card would run faster than the regular classified, but I needed to keep them at the same speed.
Any chance of running back through with that single card to see what you get?
Yes, of course, although I'm going to need a little bit more liquid nitrogen. When I was running the SLI benchmarks, I picked them because they were pretty much the soft targets on hardware bots.
So, okay.
So there is a lot of people that compete in the single card category because it's inexpensive. You don't necessarily have to have two cards to run all the way through those things. On the SLI, I'm dealing with not necessarily the pro overclockers that are clocking all the time, but the casuals that are just kind of, hey, I have two cards, I'm going to run some stuff. There is a chance I could go back and do the single card stuff. However, I will probably have to do liquid nitrogen on the GPUs themselves. I'll have to download the software so I can do voltage tuning and then figure out if I'm going to run the 9900K again or if it's going to be a different processor that will be running the whole system.
One other question for you with the 9900, is there more performance out of that if you did something extreme like delidding perhaps?
Oh, in this case, no. Because the 9900 or 9000 series from Intel are soldered again. Of course, you can delid that processor and then put some crazy chemicals on there to remove the solder and then put liquid metal on there. But you already have a metal-to-metal connection from Intel and you're just adding, well, I should say you're increasing the chance that you're going to break your CPU from one delidding. And now you have to have maintenance on the CPU to go and make sure that that connection is maintained.
There's a lot of risk there and additional costs that doesn't sound like a good return.
Yeah, you don't get any gains from it except maybe 2 or 3 degrees. And if you put liquid metal on there, which is what everybody does, it only works for air cooling. You cannot do that when you are cooling with liquid nitrogen. And once you put thermal compound on there, now you have two potential insulators of keeping that chip cold as possible when it really just wants to be really hot.
So next time with more liquid nitrogen, more overclocking, are there any particular hardware combinations you're looking forward to running?
Well, I have a whole bunch of video cards that I have not actually overclocked under liquid nitrogen, so that would be really fun. It comes down to the way that the motherboard is set up, what processor I'm going to use, and if it's going to be a stable overclock. And I have to find time. I've been trying to do a lot more with some of the custom builds and stuff on Hardware Asylum, what we did for Hackfort, and then some how-to articles, and a lot of people at Hackfort in general just saying, hey, this looks interesting. Do you have an article on it? And I'm like, maybe? And that really exposed a few holes that I need to start working on.
We talked quite a bit in our last extra and really the last couple episodes about the LAN parties and the Hackfort stuff. One of the most interesting things to me is we've had a lot of questions and a lot of follow-up questions specifically around those Silverstone lights, the install, how they work, and where can I get some? So I thought maybe, although we rarely do it, this might be a good opportunity for us to take a deeper dive into that lighting system and talk RGB lights and some of the challenges of installing those lights in that system.
You actually want to talk about RGB?
I know, but I can't believe how many people were excited about the new RGB.
I know. It was crazy. Every time I turned around, somebody was taking a picture. And I'm like, it's not that special, but maybe it is. In front of us, you know, radio, so you're going to have to imagine, I have the Silverstone LSB-02 RGB lighting kit. I say kit loosely because
yeah,
the LSB-02 is actually just the controller with some cables and a remote.
And we gave some of this stuff away, I think, at the Boise LAN also. It's readily available. This is not stuff that's hard to get, and it's not even really the most expensive lighting product on the market, which is, I think, good news.
The LSB02, though, is more than just an RGB lighting kit or controller, if you will. It has the remote start that you like so much in your build.
I do. I love the remote start. It was one of those things that I never thought I would use.
And here you are wanting another one.
I know, I know. A better one, faster, stronger, something.
The $1 million lighting kit.
Exactly. Or at least in this case, it's kind of an all-in-one solution for me.
Speaking of all-in-one, it has a fan controller and supports up to 4 fans. It has lights.
Of course it does.
Which is ARGB, which is addressable RGB. It has 2 channels for that. And it also has a standard RGB controller as well.
Oh, now that's interesting. So a little bit of backwards compatibility?
So to speak. We can get to that in a moment.
Okay.
It also has a temperature probe, which I believe will control the speed of the fans based off of where the probe is located.
Very cool.
I personally did not like the fan controller as much. It didn't seem to control the way that I expected it to, but I also didn't hook up to the temperature probe, so maybe that's why. From the remote, you can control the fans on and off, the LEDs on and off. It has a demo mode, so you can just let it cycle through every one of the LED programs that are built in.
Now, there's the eye candy for you, right?
Yeah, that was what got people coming around all the time because it was doing a different show every couple of seconds. It was pretty awesome. And you can turn the fans up and down. You can change the modes manually. You can program them. You can change the lighting intensity. It has everything, all from this little button control thing.
Now, the one thing I notice about that controller is it's very small. It's about the same size as a credit card, mm-hmm. although it's maybe a quarter inch deep.
Yep.
But it looks like the buttons on it are, I don't know, membrane?
They're
looking at it.
They're the weak membrane stuff.
Oh, now I've seen these in a lot of like the little like desktop stereos and stuff. So that's, I think, maybe if there were a weak spot in the system, this would be the one I'd identify because it's been my experience that these buttons can wear out over time.
It's interesting that you mentioned that because that is also the biggest weak point of this particular system because that is the only way to control this stuff.
Oh, so there's not a software suite that controls it.
Nope. You can't plug it into a USB port and expect to control the lights. That would be, if that was in here, this would be a perfect product.
Interesting. Well, good feedback for the Silverstone folks. Maybe there'll be a pro version with software that will do this in the near future.
The cool thing, though, speaking of RGB lights, is that there is 2 accessories that go along with the LSB02 from Silverstone. The first one is an air penetrator fan with addressable RGB lights around the ring.
Nice.
So this is Silverstone is famous for their air penetrator fans. These are fans that move the air in a column upwards. So they work great for air cooling systems, also on radiators. Fan blades are clear. They're a bit weak. That's the one thing I don't like about them too much. But the lighting in here is daisy chainable. So I had in my build at the LAN party, 3 of these fans daisy chained together. And as the lights would go from one fan, it would move to the next fan and then to the last fan.
Now, I noticed these have, it looks like, rubber mounting systems to reduce vibration. Do we know, is this a ball bearing fan, a sealed bearing, magnetic? What level of fan are we talking about?
I don't know. And it's not really in the documentation.
So likely this is not the super expensive high-end fan, which I think reflects in the price.
Again, as I mentioned, the fan is a bit flexible. I can twist it around here. The fan blades are clear. Clear plastic is a bit stiffer, doesn't flex as much as some of the higher quality black plastics that are used, the ABSs. So I would assume that along with that, the ball bearings are probably average.
Well, this is, I think, one of those cases where you sacrifice a little bit of performance to get that bling factor.
It's funny you bring up the fans because the reason I don't like the fan controller as much is because I had these fans hooked up to it and they would run at full speed all the time. And that's when the fans got actually noticeably loud. And I didn't like that as much. So I ran them off the motherboard instead because they are PWM fans and they work great on motherboard controllers.
So you can run them off the motherboard and still get the light control action off of the board?
Yes, because there are these 2 leads, which of course, since this is radio, you can't see them. But there's 3-pin RGB, addressable RGB leads on here. You have 1 in and 1 out. And from there, you have the various wires that come with the controller that allow you to plug into the controller and split it off to 2 fans. with one split, and then you can daisy chain the fans together from there.
Very interesting. Now, you got a lot of different cables out here. Did you end up having to manufacture cables? I know in the past we've had to make some, I guess, pretty interesting, although easy, mods to try to get all the different lights to talk to each other.
No, these all work in the Silverstone ecosystem, so they all have the same plug, including the ones to the addressable RGB strips.
Well, I think that's a nice advantage. It's expandable, and that means that your controller doesn't limit the amount of fans that you have in your system, which is also a nice plus.
The other cable that I have out here is, if you look, it has a 4-pin header on it.
Oh, yeah.
But one of them is blocked out. And that is because this is the addressable RGB that allows you to plug into motherboard controllers. So you can run these lights off of your motherboard lighting system.
If you have a compatible system, I'm assuming.
Yes. Compatibility of it is a bit iffy. Silverstone doesn't claim that they are working with like the ASUS Aris or the Mystic Light system from MSI. That isn't on the box. And when I was running this off of the Aris WaterForce motherboard, the addressable header didn't necessarily control the lights the way I expected, because I believe the Aris software was expecting a certain amount of lights. Whereas when I was daisy chaining these together, I would get to a certain point and then the lights would get out of sync. And I'm thinking that was probably the issue. Whereas if I was running it off of the controller, which is what I did in the build, I could daisy chain, I had 3 strips and 2 fans on one controller at one point.
Yeah, this is something that I think is worth mentioning, because we talked about this a little bit in the CES post also, because there was so much RGB there, but there isn't really a single standard yet for RGB. Most of the major manufacturers are pushing their own ecosystem, and the smaller manufacturers are forced to come up with compatibility for one or more of those systems in order to get them to work, or a standalone controller like this.
Yeah, it's kind of the Wild West in the RGB right now, and I'm not sure that there's going to be one ecosystem for everything. And that's why we have individual plugs and stuff like that, namely because the motherboard controllers have a power limit that they have to deal with off of that header, which is why you might be able to only run 20 lights off of one header. So they'll include 2 or 3 headers so you can run 2 or 3 strips, but you're not going to be able to run a strip and a fan, which is where an external controller like the LSB02 comes in handy. As I had mentioned, the remote is the only way to control the controller, so to speak.
Right.
So some motherboard software would be great for that. It would also be nice if you could run the motherboard header into the controller and then use the power management in the controller to then daisy chain all of these other strips and fans together off of that.
Oh, yeah, that totally makes sense, because you can get the power boost from anywhere. Yeah. And that way the controller is just the brains behind it. One single location for the software too.
I would say check out the review of the LSB02 on Hardware Asylum, and also look for the video that I will be posting with it. It shows me going through each one of the lighting modes, and some of them are actually really cool.
At the end of the day, it definitely attracts folks. It looks great, and it just shows me that the future for RGB is bright. Dennis, I wanted to talk about some really exciting news that came out over the last couple of weeks in the gaming world. It is true that they've officially announced that they're going to allow ray tracing on non-RTX GPUs. And you know what that means?
You'll be able to play Battlefield with ray tracing?
I'll get ray tracing on Battlefield on my 1070. I won't have to buy an RTX right away. And I'm kind of excited about that, but I don't know if that is really the right solution. Have you seen that?
I have seen the article. I haven't looked through it in depth, but this is something that we talked about when RTX launched, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Because, you know, the stock had dropped. It had fallen because of mining and stuff like that. And the fact that RTX comes out twice as much as a competitive Pascal card.
So expensive, I know, which is what has been the major delay in getting them. And it's also made them not very fun to get for reviewing, although they're coming, we think.
We hope that they're coming. And by the time that you're listening to this, the GTX 1660 and 1660 Ti have come out, which is the Turing version without the ray tracing stuff, which maybe this is so that those cards can play the ray tracing titles. But
that's an interesting tie-in.
So when we were at CES listening to the NVIDIA keynote, Jensen had leaked something well, he didn't really leak it. He just kind of nonchalantly mentioned that Pascal cards would be able to do ray tracing. But that was actually at a performance hit. And where the Tesser cards come in to boop, as he did in the presentation.
That's right.
To bring the performance back up to where it needed to be. If we can run ray tracing on a Pascal card or some of the older cards, it'll be a lot like running when PhysX first came out, right? You could run it on an 8000 series GTX card. Since there wasn't a lot of CUDA cores there, it really taxed your video card. It would not run very efficiently at all. You still needed to have that add-on card in, you know, that extra card to run it.
Yeah, but that did give us an opportunity to use those older video cards as like a slave card as opposed to them being obsolete when you bought a new video card.
And that is something that is a little unclear whether or not you can do that with Pascal cards. In April, this is not quite April by the time we're recording this, so in April, we'll find out how that actually works and what kind of a performance hit you get.
Well, very exciting. I know I have still my 1070, which is, I still think, really the sweet spot for price for performance, even still after the release of the RTX cards. Now, would I recommend an RTX card? Well, maybe if you're still stuck in like a 780 or an older card like that. Mm-hmm. But with my 1070, I felt like the only thing I was missing was these features. What do you think? Am I going to be able to do it? Will I need a second card? Or is this just them trying to grab a little bit extra headlines while they get their RTX act together?
I'm going to go with all three.
Oh, no.
Or two, or however many you mentioned there. Basically, the releasing RTX is they told us, to everybody that's listening, that we told you so.
Ah, right.
You know, this is what NVIDIA probably should have done. However, there's a reason that they didn't, and it's probably one to promote the new Turing architecture, and two, because of the performance hit that Jensen had mentioned during the CEO's keynote. That is remains to be seen. However, that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. You might be able to run the ray tracing stuff in Battlefield and in some of the newer games, maybe at a lower quality setting to make it actually work. That's not necessarily a bad thing, because that way you still get the increased graphics. Maybe it will also somehow get past the RTX tax. Remember when Battlefield first came out with RTX?
Oh, yeah. It was not pretty.
It was not pretty. And I think that was because they hadn't hooked up the Tesser Core stuff or the DLSS part of the Turing architecture. So that has yet to remain to be seen as well. The fact that NVIDIA releases a driver, which is, again, the told you so. I want to keep saying that. It's just me saying, I was right. The fact that they're releasing the driver now after the RTX launch is so that more people can adopt ray tracing, and maybe that will lead into more sales of new cards.
Well, and to be fair, there aren't very many software packages and games that support it. So if you increase the base installation, we'll see lots more cool ray tracing games, hopefully very soon. So I'm looking forward to it. Maybe I won't have to buy a video card after all. I guess we'll see.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwaresound.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2019. Thanks for listening.